Okay, welcome back. Hour number two, a very special guest for all of us this hour to spend some time with. He is Clark McClelland. He is a scientist, and we're going to tell you a lot more about Clark in just a moment. Let me go back a few days when the alleged president, the imposter in chief, the chief teleprompter reader, and chain smoker, illegal alien, Barry Satoru, called for sending people to Mars and back in his lifetime. Well, had there been any real leadership, we probably would have done this already years ago. I'm not sure on that, but I know damn well that we don't have to wait another 30 or 40 years. Now, this drew not enough outrage from the highest level of America's space program, but it did draw some. And Neil Armstrong was certainly one of them, and Clark McClelland was another. Are you there, Clark?
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Let me read to our listeners what you had to say about Obama's, really, he didn't think this up, but his handlers, the controllers, what they had him say,
right,
and the policy that he pronounced. Former NASA Kennedy Space Center scientist and American patriot hero, Clark McClelland, who fears no man, by the way, and those are my own words, this is a brave American, said, and I quote, "Our national manned space program has been destroyed. Obama has made the national pride of all we have accomplished since our initial satellite, Explorer 1, in 1958, a thing of the past. It is treason." I must wonder if your readers understand Obama administration's decisions has delivered a $6 billion NASA budget allowance for robotic and international missions into space by the U.S. Why international? Yes, U.S. tax dollars will continue to finance foreign international missions, have Russian cosmonauts and those of India, Japan, etc., flown to our, that's ours, folks, International Space Station, otherwise known as the ISS. Yes, your ISS, that is about 97% paid for by the U.S., who constructed and designed the whole thing. Yet few NASA astronauts will be out there in the future. This president is destroying our world-leading 50-plus years of space exploration during his very short time in the White House. It is a major federal crime. How many recognize it as such? He has sided with Russia and China to bring down the U.S. and our global lead in space science, industry, education, and so forth. Our national security is in deep jeopardy. Wise up, America. So said Clark McClelland. Has the anger subsided at all, Clark, or is it getting worse within you, my friend? You've served our country so long.
People have brought that, they've talked to me about it and said, you shouldn't say that about the president. And I said, listen, I don't care if it's the president, all the Senate, the Congress, and whoever else. If they're doing that to the people I worked with, love dearly, their families, their homes are being lost now. I said, am I supposed to sit back and say not a damn word about it while everybody else thinks I'm a great guy? I said, I will never do that. My family started here on board the Mayflower, and I will be a patriot for this nation to the day I die.
Why, Clark, weren't there more people of your stature and integrity standing up from within and without the space program, yelling and shouting this down as betrayal and treason, which it is?
They were at the gates of the Space Center with signs. They were at the gates with signs cutting down the Obama decision, et cetera, et cetera.
Before he spoke, right before he spoke.
Yeah, right before he spoke. And, of course, after he spoke, they were still at the gates.
Sure.
He spoke. They were about 50 people in the audience. They were political hacks.
Uh-huh.
That's all they were. There wasn't anyone that I know of that have worked on sending the shuttle into orbit or men to the moon during the Apollo or Gemini, Mercury, etc.
Mm-hmm.
In that audience. My God, the very people he's destroying,
mm-hmm.
he denied access to question him.
Yeah. Disgusting. Thoroughly disgusting.
It's treason.
Yeah. Well, it's not being an American at the very least.
No, no.
This is
not American at all.
Well, our country is no longer in our own hands. We know that.
No, it's not. Mm-mm.
You have experienced many things, and you have come forward recently with some shocking information, not to me, but to many others. And we'll get into that in a little bit about visitors and so forth. But
yeah.
I want to go back to 1959. Dr. Von Braun.
Von Braun told
a reporter for the News Europa agents.
Well, it was a News Europa newspaper, I believe, back in 59. And,
mm-hmm.
and really, I know very little about what paper it was, but it was someplace in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And he said, and I'll quote here, this is Dr. Wernher von Braun, "We feel ourselves faced by powers which are far stronger than we hitherto assumed. More I cannot say at present. We are now engaged in entering into a closer contact with these powers, and in 6 to 9 months' time, it may be possible to speak with more precision on the matter," end quote. He knew.
Oh, he absolutely knew. That was the 59. Later, of course, I worked through the late 50s and the 60s with him up to 70 or so. And then he came forth, and we were out talking right before the launch of one of the Apollo missions, the first one to the moon, in fact, with Neil Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked Dr. von Braun if he actually said that. He repeated his exact disclosure to me at KSC of what you read earlier.
Wow.
And then I wanted to ask him about what star race they were.
Mm-hmm.
NASA rushed officials over to me, took him away from me, and I wasn't able to get any verification on that.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. We've got a lot of people in our government and these agencies that are not really pro-American like you and I.
Right. Is the penalty for spilling the beans the ultimate penalty? Are these people really under the threat? Not directly. It doesn't have to be mentioned necessarily. But if they expose the reality of our knowledge of and perhaps negotiations and cooperation
with
extraterrestrials, they'll be killed.
Well, either killed or they're going to lose
everything
their
they
retirement.
Have. Their children.
They'll be in poverty like I am right now.
Right.
They destroyed my, hopefully, retirement. I'm in poverty now. I live on Social Security, and that's not enough to live on.
This is outrageous.
Oh, it's totally outrageous. But few people seem to have any care. I tell you the truth, Jeff. Our nation has become a brain-dead, dumbed-down bunch of sheep.
Yeah.
And unless they wise up real quick, and I think maybe we've come to a point where we probably may not be able to save the country any longer.
I'm afraid you may be right.
We have no industry. We send our jobs overseas. We bring people overseas to here to take our jobs. And yet these brain-dead people I see every day around here, I love my nation, my people,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
if they're brain-dead, they have to be told that.
Right. Well, it's the old story of how do you awaken something that's not there?
Well, I'm one person. You're another. There are not too many of us. We're trying. And I'm tired. I'm old. I'm getting tired. I'd like to ask if the audience hearing us right now could please open my www.stargate-chronicles.com website. I finally disclosed my first book chapter on that.
Really?
No one will publish my books.
Well, we'll do it in an e-book format at some point at rents.com for you if we can, whatever I can do to help. I remember when Clark first talked to me about this book, and it's an easy 10 years ago, and no one will touch it for rather obvious reasons. If you click on Clark's name at rents.com, you'll go right to his website. And again, it's Stargate-Chronicles.com. StargateChronicles.com. Yes.
Thank you very much. I need help. That chapter, I'm asking only $5.50 to open it and read it. It's about the very famous Nixon-Gleason visit to Homestead Air Force Base in 1973,
wow,
where they observed and saw alien beings.
So, okay, hold on, Clark, please.
Okay.
Go to Clark's website, Clark C. McClelland, an American scientist, patriot, hero, and look right near the top. You'll see on the right a picture of Jackie Gleason and Nixon. It's put together, a composite. But they're looking at a case with an ET body inside of it,
yes,
a glass case. The chapter dealing with that, and it is a famous story, and Clark's telling of it brings out far more detail than I've ever heard. You can download it, $5, click right there, and read it. It's amazing. Clark's book is amazing, and if there's a publisher out there, you know how to contact me, and I'll certainly get in touch with Clark.
Yeah,
you're welcome. Back in just a minute. Okay, and we're back with Clark, talking about, at the moment, the Nixon-Gleason foray,
yes,
to show Jackie something that he never would have been able to see if he had not been friends with the president. Let me read a little bit here from the chapter you can download right now by clicking on Clark's site right in the obvious location where it says click here. They continued to drive into the base, and Nixon seemed to know exactly where to go. They drove to a far end of the base, and alone, U.S. Air Force Lieutenant Gleason, thought that was his rank, wearing a security clearance badge, met them and accompanied the two distinguished men to the hangar entrance. The officer apparently was aware that the President, and Gleason would be arriving. They entered the large hangar with an assigned, single, unarmed military police escort, and all you have to do is click on the site to read the whole story. Jackie, the Honeymooners, really a very talented motion picture and film actor, and quite a character, got to see what most of us would only dream about seeing. And Nixon may have been the last president to have direct access to this, huh?
Yeah, I personally believe he was, because I think they've kept that out of the knowledge of every president since then. And two, the people he had working with him was Rumsfeld and Cheney.
Oh, God help us.
And, of course, they were up and involved with the government up until the 2000 period.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe the three of them, Nixon, Rumsfeld, and Cheney, have the knowledge that we're talking about now.
Right.
I doubt seriously that Clinton, Bush Sr., well, Bush Sr., I believe, had it, but not Bush Jr. He was too stupid.
Well, Sr. had it probably by virtue of the CIA background and
yes,
his connections.
Exactly. He, in fact, declined to have, I think it was, who was it, Carter wanted to know, some knowledge of it. And he said, you don't have the right to know that. And
right.
President of the United States doesn't have a right to know that?
Well, that tells us what president means anymore.
Yeah.
Apparently,
let me say something, please. I have more than one book, Jeff. I have probably 4 books.
Wow. All right.
And
are we
I have about 53 chapters.
Uh-huh. Are we looking for a publisher for all of this, Clark?
Well,
right now?
I've had very little help until recently. And then computers being attacked and destroyed, like happened to me about 3-4 months ago. I had to rush out and spend the last bit of little money I had to get another computer here with the help of my fiance, and bang, it's working. But my God, it's chipping away at me to the point where I can't afford it, and I need some help.
make sure you're well backed up and secure,
yeah,
all of your material. It's more than important. There have been efforts, of course, as you're hearing, to make life rather difficult for Clark. Were you, when you worked with the program, Clark, were you known as a troublemaker by the higher-ups, or were you just one of the team?
No, there were fear of the higher-ups, of me. because of the knowledge I had.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's some out there and say I was a low-level nothing at NASA. Well, let me say this. If I was a low-level nothing at NASA, why was I an SCO testing space shuttles before they were launched?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to have the knowledge of an astronaut to do that.
Right.
I had to have astronaut physical. I have a lot more to tell the people, but it's very difficult to. You see, the media is controlled, as you well know, by you know who.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And since they're controlling it, there's no way in the world they're going to let me on most of the radio shows, the Larry King and whatever else. And two, if you would mention, please, the comments that were made by Dr. Herman Oberth. That's very important. You have it on the sheet just below Von Braun.
Yeah, let me get to that. I'm looking at the clock here,
yeah.
How much time we have. Yeah, we do. Okay, let me go right below Von Braun. There. All right, hold on. 50 more minutes. Which graph is it?
It's the first page. It's on July 16th, 1969, the evening prior.
Okay, got it. Prior to the Apollo 11 mission to the moon, there it is. Dr. Herman Oberth was at a special NASA meeting on Cocoa Beach. I was also attending that meeting. Dr. Oberth and I were talking when I asked him about if he believed in aliens from the stars. He said he disagreed with those historians that give Germany credit for the brilliant rocket accomplishments and pioneering rocket designs. He said to me, quote, "We, von Braun, alone cannot take the credit for our advances in rocket technology. We were helped by people from other worlds."
Yes.
End quote.
I asked, what other worlds? And he said, Aryans from Aldebaran.
Did we nail down a location any more than Aldebaran?
No, right after that comment, he and his wife were taken from me by NASA again. Away from my presence.
See, this is two Germans who knew the truth and were obviously being watched at all times, lest they say something they shouldn't.
Now, let me say this, please. Aldebaran is a giant orangish-red star. It's about 65.1 light years distance from us. Now, 6 trillion miles per year is a light. It's what light travels,
mm-hmm.
6 trillion miles. So 65.1 is the distance of Aldebaran, which is in the constellation called the Hyades.
Very good. Stand by right there. Clark will come right back. And Aldebaran, A-L-D-E-B-A-R-A-N, if you want to look it up,
yes,
folks.
Yes, Aldebaran.
All right, very good. Back in just a minute. All right, let's return to our conversation with Clark McClellan. Two of the most distinguished and brilliant geniuses in rocket scientists ever, Dr. Herman Oberth and the amazing Dr. Wernher von Braun, both told Clark McClellan the truth. Simple.
That's
no
right.
Big secret. I hope you put the book together to the extent that we can all buy it soon. And I would urge all of you again to go to Clark's site at Stargate-Chronicles.com and click on that chapter available right now, PDF, Help This American Scientific and Patriotic Hero Out. Let's make this happen. It's only $5. It's a great story. I'm going to get it myself. Jackie Gleason and President Nixon view alien bodies at Homestead Air Force Base. Need I say much more than that? I hope not. Now, I want all of you to go. Go ahead, Clark. You want to say something?
Can I say one thing, please?
Of course you can.
Von Braun and I discussed many topics, including E.T. life in the 1960s. He confirmed my suspicions that there were many other star races and that the Earth had many such colonies here. He said the Earth is a nursery for many such star-seeded races that colonize our planet, and stated, look at the variations of humans, the culture. physical appearance, food, clothing, and war. He was telling me our plans from nursery.
Okay, so the basic racial characteristics of the major racial groups on the planet are evidence of either genetic manipulation or genetic seeding of some kind. You have the black, the Caucasian, certainly the Latino or brown, and then the Asians are obviously different.
They're obvious.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my God, his nursery comment had my head swimming that night.
I'm sure.
And another thing, a real big fact. In 1997, a substellar companion was found orbiting Aldebaran.
Oh, really?
A planet, or some call it a red, a red dwarf star.
Uh-huh.
But who's correct, a planet or a red dwarf star? The planet, if it is a planet, is bigger than Jupiter.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm saying that for a reason. When I was observing an STS mission, I won't say which one, I observed an 8 to 9 foot tall ET in the space shuttle payload bay with two of our NASA astronauts.
Let me point everyone to Rents.com. Please reload the page, refresh the page, and I've waited, and it's up there now. Look under Clark McClellan's name, tall ET in the shuttle cargo bay. Pull that, click on that, pull up the picture, and that is what Clark is talking about. Now, tell us the circumstances of, I don't want the mission name, but how were you viewing this? How many others were viewing this?
Well, I was in the launch control center in a secret room monitoring the mission. And I believe that night my teammate, when there's missions on in progress, there's a lot to watch, but not too much activity. So he was studying for a master's degree the next morning, and I put him in the vault that we had. I locked it. I spun the lock. I said, "You study, and you pass that test tomorrow." So I went out and took care of his business and mine. There wasn't that much really to do. I went out to get a coffee. I went over to the fax machine to see if there was anything there, and there was nothing there for us to follow through with. I went back to my six monitors, 27-inch TV screens. I looked at the first one. There was not much there. Second one, I noticed something behind the tail section of the shuttle. The third one was zoomed in on the payload bay. I saw two NASA astronauts, one left, one right, of this 8 to 9 foot tall creature. I can't say it was an ET. I don't know. But we don't have 8 to 9 foot tall astronauts. And this object behind the tail section was an alien craft I've never seen before.
How accurate, Clark, is that representation of what you saw? Are you really right on with it? Do you feel
right on? I'll tell you why.
Uh-huh.
I knew the shuttle inside out being a spacecraft operator. I had to know the size of the payload bay. I had, without a doubt, estimated that height 8 to 9 feet. Mm-hmm. Might have been 10 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Very accurately. And I knew the shuttle inside out. I was complimented many times by astronauts because of my SCO duties for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I have a friend I met after my observation that observed the same type of 8 to 9 foot tall creature in the crew compartment inside of the space shuttle. Now, it's not built or designed for an 8 to 9 foot tall giant.
No, and this is a...
It was stooped over. I have not released the graphics on that yet.
Uh-huh.
I looked at the VCR I had at the time. There was always a tape in there.
Mm-hmm.
The night this happened to me with the creature in the payload bay,
mm-hmm.
The second shift, forgot to put a tape in the damn machine. I would have taped it.
Well, things like that happen. It's amazing. When you look at the picture, all of you, click on again. It's below Clark's name. you'll see right smack in the middle of the payload bay, it's a humanoid, very much looking like a human, two arms, two legs, with a large helmet and a very large view screen of glass or something like that that the creature can see through. We call it, it looks very much like a very large human being. The two astronauts look like children next to it. But this is what Clark saw. You must have, your jaw must have dropped just about to the floor.
I was on a chair. I leaned back. I was afraid it was going to fall backward.
I would think.
and my coffee, I nearly choked when I took a sip of it because I had to have something going down my throat. And, my God, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I had no witness. And all I can ask the people hearing this is, believe it or not, but I'm not lying at. I'm not telling you a lie.
My
reputation's up for consideration right now. I would not be lying.
Clark, I've known you for a long time, and you've never, ever come even close to pushing the limits of anything. You've always told it pragmatically, logically, and comprehensively.
Right.
You don't play games.
We have developed a craft called the TR-3B.
I want to talk to you about that next. So stand by. We'll take a quick break.
Okay,
when we come back, I want you to describe just in a minute or so what the tall ET did with the two astronauts in the cargo bay to the best of your ability.
Right.
And we don't want to spill the whole story. This is going to be in your book when it comes out in great detail. But the TR-3B is something I broke on this program a long, long time ago.
Oh, yes. I know that.
And we'll talk about that with the remarkable Clark McClelland in just a couple of minutes.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, welcome back. Talking with Clark McClelland. If any of you have seen the SDS videos on the internet, YouTube especially, you know that there is an awful lot of activity around shuttle missions and the ISS up there, intelligent activity, and it's not us. Okay, a little bit, just a tiny bit more, and Clark's book, The Stargate Chronicles, hopefully will be published soon. It's got bestseller written front to back on it, but will any of the majors touch it? You know the answer to that. Now, what did they do in the cargo bay? Just give us a little bit more information.
Okay, real quick on that. I only observed it for a minute and 7 seconds. Now, a lot of people say, oh, my God, that's such a short time. But you see, I'm a trained observer. And during a minute and 7 seconds, I observed so much, and I'm also an artist. So I was able to sketch down what you see on my website. I had someone do the artwork, coloration and all, but the creature was waving its arms as if it was instructing the two NASA astronauts. I didn't hear anything. I had no capability of doing that. But I do honestly believe after a minute and 6 to 7 seconds, NASA Houston realized, here I am observing this, maybe even taping it. And whammo, away it went. And zoomed past, and I could see this craft behind the tail section of the shuttle. It looked pretty big, too, but I can't say the size because it had nothing to estimate it with.
Wow, what an interesting shape. It does have an aerodynamic shape, which would look to lend itself to flying through a thick atmosphere. It's got wings.
Yeah, that, too.
Got wings for lift and all that. Okay. The TR-3, now Clark, as soon as you get your book finished, I will promote it to the best of my ability. You're going to have a lot of help, as you know. Of course. The TR-3B, which I broke on this program a long time ago.
Yeah.
That is a triangular craft.
Yes, it
is. Which allegedly has been in service and may have replaced the SR-71.
That's exactly true.
Okay. Tell us a little bit more about the TR-3B.
Well, personally, what I believe people were seeing with these triangle craft with the lights on the three corners, maybe one in the center and whatever else, are the TR-3B or an advanced model. Now, we're going to test with a launch tomorrow a new what's called space-type plane. It's a small model being launched on an Atlas V. Now, believe it or not, the Atlas V we're flying have Russian engines in them.
Oh, you're kidding.
No. Why the hell do we have Russian engines in an Atlas that the United States built? We have engine companies in the nation that need the work.
I don't understand that at all.
Oh, yes. Russian engines in the Atlas V.
They had to take the Atlas apart and reinstall it with an engine that was Russian.
Yeah.
Nuts. Crazy.
Now, that's insane.
Yeah. Wow.
We have engine manufacturers that are out of work now.
Lots of them. Why did they dismantle and destroy the basic science that put men on the moon?
I think there's some things hidden there that they won't disclose to you. I've seen things happen on the moon when I was in astronomy with objects, lighted objects, moving across the surface of the moon. I believe there's something behind on the backside of the moon that has not been disclosed to the human races yet. And I'm wondering whether or not there's possibly an alien base back there, but I honestly believe Ben Rich, the CEO of the Skunk Works for Lockheed, I talked to him one day, and he said, Clark, we are at least 50-plus years ahead of the technology that you right now know. He said black budget money has us that far ahead. So probably we've gone back to the moon, possibly to Mars already.
Right.
That's my opinion.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me either.
No, it wouldn't have surprised me at all.
And basically what we've been watching here with this whole space shuttle program, and this does not demean the heroic efforts of astronauts alive and those that we've lost, or the scientists like Clark, was a parallel track of primitive technology compared to what we really have.
Yeah.
All right? And that was for the public, basically. And also keep in mind that virtually every shuttle mission was military to one degree or another. Many of them were all military. The militarization of space is another issue that is rather obvious to people. Okay,
anyway.
So the TR-3B, triangular craft sighted and watched all over the world, especially North America, some in South America as well. Doing amazing
Europe.
Things.
Yeah.
And in Europe, of course, in Belgium and France. They were moving in France at a speed that people on the ground could keep up with, walking fast, for goodness sake,
and
at one
very
point.
Very large, too.
Yeah. Now, the question I have, and a lot of people would want to ask you the same thing, if these enormous triangular craft are ours, and they might be, some of them might not be.
That's right.
Why would they fly them a couple hundred feet over populated areas, either suburban or urban or rural, when there are so many people with high-powered rifles? And let's be honest, you got a deer hunter with a few beers, he's within his rights to take a shot at something like this because they don't officially exist, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never heard of anybody doing that.
So if you were in charge of a trillion-dollar program, Clark McClellan, that had been 40 or 50 years ahead of anything the public knew, would you allow those craft to fly over populated areas that low?
No, I would not. But I'm not a general in the U.S. Air Force or an admiral in the United States Navy like people I work with and for at the Space Center. And then, too, another thing, not to get off at TR-3B, I wonder why Buzz Aldrin joined Obama. It just got me in shock.
I can't answer that. I don't know.
Well,
I would also be remiss if I didn't mention that poor British young man, Gary McKinnon, the hacker, and how they're trying to get him over here. Obviously, he'll never leave if they succeed in getting him over here.
Yeah.
Do you suspect, Clark, that he found more than he has discussed so far?
Oh, he said he heard of non-terrestrial officers.
Correct.
And two, there's a clearance of secrecy at Patrick Air Force Base, exactly that, for the security badges. Why?
Amazing. Another thing, people. Go ahead.
A friend of mine found something odd about Phobos, the Mars moon.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked if I could mention, if somebody would have an interest, to go to arccode.com and read what they found about Mars and Phobos, the moon. Mars was my subject when I was in astronomy. That's A-R-K. That's capital A-R-K, capital C-O-D-E.com. If they'd like to enter that and study what they've found there.
All right, that's arccode.com. All right, very good.
Yes, A-R-K. Capital A-R-K, capital C-O-D-E dot com.
Got it.
And that'd be very interesting. I've read it. And why? I don't know if you believe in the Bible code or not, but they found me in the Bible code. Why?
I don't know. All right, so, we just have a couple minutes. Let me ask you a couple quick questions.
Okay.
Would it surprise you in any way, and we've touched upon this a little bit already, Clark, that we have technology to freely travel back and forth to the moon and to Mars and know damn well exactly what's going on the planet Mars to a large degree, if not a very substantial degree?
Yes.
We know. Would that surprise you?
Not at all, because I believe a Mars race came to Earth when Mars was beginning to decay and not have enough support to keep life forms there. I think we have Martians on Earth as part of those star races and that nursery that von Braun spoke of earlier. So that's a big thing. I've done chapters about this that I've not released in my books. I've got about 53 or 54 chapters. So I've got maybe 3 or 4 books, and there's some chapters I've got that would knock... would turn your hair gray.
All right, how do we get these books of yours published, Clark? How do we help you?
Jeff, I've tried for almost 20 years now. I have been totally blackballed. And you know who owns the media?
Yeah.
Worldwide.
Well, we're going to get these books published in ebook format somehow, some way, because we have a birthright to this information that you have.
Well, the human race does, yes.
Yes.
I've tried to get them published in China, Japan, Italy, Germany, Spain, UK, even Russia. I've been shut down worldwide.
All right. Well, I'll be in touch with you because I have a platform that we may be able to work together on and get this book out in an ebook format right away. But in the meantime, let me ask all of you to support Clark and download that one chapter, $5, PDF format, and read about President Nixon and Jackie Gleason going to Homestead Air Force Base. An amazing story. Final comment from you, Clark, if you would.
I'd just like him to open www.stargate-chronicles.com and help me with that chapter, and we'll go from there, and maybe then I can join you again on another night for another hour if we're not shut down like we were on Monday.
Any time at all, Clark, you're more than welcome, and I appreciate the friendship for all the years. Yeah,
thank you very much for this evening, and thanks for trying Monday, and most people don't realize that you made 12 attempts to call me, and the goons, whether they were federal government or what, shut you off, and I couldn't receive a call on my phone.
Well, you're here tonight. We did it, and you'll be back again. Anytime you're at all interested, just let me know.
Well, you're quite a patriot of this country, Jeff.
Thank you, my friend. Take care. Thank you.
All right, God bless. Take care.
Okay, Clark, you too.
Thank you. Bye.
All righty. Clark McClelland is really a remarkable story, stepping forward to reveal some truths of what he saw and experienced as an American hero aerospace engineer and SCO at the Space Shuttle Fleet headquarters at the Kennedy Space Center. All right, we'll be right back.